Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Homemaker Chic, where we are picking flowers and rescuing the art of the
homemaking. We're rescuing the art of the homemaking from the daily grind.
The homemaking. We are rescuing the art of homemaking. That's what I get for looking at my notes from the daily grind in our red lipstick and no jumpers. I am your host, Angela Reed of Parisian Farm Girl, joined by fellow flower addict, Shay Elliott of the Elliott Homestead. Good morning, Shay.
Good morning. Yes, I will gladly wave that flower loving flag.
For sure.
Proudly.
Proudly. In the spirit of better, not more, we're encouraging our listeners to buy less, but absolutely buy better for the sake of their home environment. And it's in this spirit that we carefully select our advertisers. We have selected American Blossom Linens. I think they're going to be with us for a long time, Shay. It turns out our audience really loves their sheets about much as we do.
Hello, how could you not? How could you not?
American Blossom Linens is the bedding that both Shay and I sleep on. Juliet's come the day after tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So we are going through our house room by room and converting even the children over. We love our modern vintage sheets made from Texas grown cotton. No dyes, no imported fabrics here. You guys, these sheets are woven to last a lifetime. So you buy them once and then you don't ever buy them again.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just keep buying them and do the rest of your house like us. And then you buy a second set so that on sheets day, you can just put fresh sheets right on the bedding.
What a luxury.
I know. They get softer with each washing and they will become one of your favorite investments into your home. They're definitely an investment, but you're not running to Kohl's looking for one of those obnoxious sales every, you know, every 18 months or whatever to replace them. So turn your bedroom into an organic chic oasis by using the promo code Homemaker Chic 20 and get an exclusive 20% off discount just for listening to the show. So that's AmericanBlossomLinens.com. Homemaker Chic 20 is your discount code.
We're going to have to start doing some vocal warm-ups before we record our podcast, like singers, you know? Like do some tongue twisters. Warm up our mouths a little bit.
Right. Watermelon, 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 exactly, watermelon.
Exactly. Today's episode is also brought to you by our beloved Jovial Foods. You guys have heard us talk about them. We love them so much. It's one of the things I would grab if my house was on fire. I would grab all of my einkorn flour and I would run outside with it. Jovial Foods is a company that supplies us homemakers with gorgeous baking flours and pantry foods. So this is what I use to stock my pantry. Every month I do an order for canned beans and flours and wheat berries to grind into flour, olive oils and snacks and all this yummy stuff. Have you baked anything recently? I know you're kind of on an einkorn shortage right now.
It's bad. I'm like rationing when my order comes.
I
did 4 loaves of sandwich bread.
Okay.
The day before yesterday. So I think the family is eating that right now.
Oh, lovely.
You know, toast and eggs.
Yes. So. Mm-hmm. Lovely. We did some fresh ricotta. I made cheese yesterday. We had some fresh
ricotta yesterday.
Oh, nice. Oh. Okay. Fresh ricotta, einkorn flour, ricotta pancakes, forget about it, as they say. But
if you have Ange's cookbook, Granny Smith apple ricotta pancakes.
Okay. Well, there's no apples here to be had quite yet, but we do have blackberries, so that's something.
Ooh.
But I would encourage you, go visit their website at jovialfoods.com. Build a cart of all these yummy pantry items and stock your pantry with these delicious quality ingredients. We love you, Jovial.
We love you, Jovial.
Yes, we do. We do.
Speaking of cookbooks.
Okay.
If you don't have a copy of my cookbook From France to the Farm or Shay's cookbook,
From Scratch.
Yeah. My bad. But you need Family Table too.
Well, I can't do that with Family Table because, you know.
Okay. You need to head over to patreon.com/homemakerchicpodcast and join us over there because that's where you can show your love for the podcast. And in return, we show our love with digital downloads of our cookbooks, digital downloads of our pit list, which is where we write down everything that we've been procrastinating on so we can just get it done.
Yep.
And keep the home in order. We have lots of fun. And at the end of each month, we have a sort of fangirl hangout. So we do a Zoom call and we all pour a glass of wine and we have a riot. And mm-hmm. so if you haven't done that yet, the minute this episode is over, you need to join us over on Patreon so that you can be a part of the July fangirl call because it's a riot. So let's pack the house. We packed the house last month.
Yes.
There was a lot of girls there.
Figuratively speaking, of course. Figuratively. If you're a government official.
And you won't have to wear a mask because it's just digital.
That's true. I love that.
So join us over on Patreon. Shay, we have a really sweet love comment for today.
Okay, and, let's hear it.
I picked it
because
she's a Northern Wisconsin girl. So hi, Hannah from Northern Wisconsin. We love you.
How many people live in Northern Wisconsin? It can't be
that
many.
There's about 12 of us.
Okay, I was just going to say. You probably
right now, there's about 250,000 of us because this is a vacation destination.
Everyone is fleeing Chicago.
Leaf falls or we have a frost, it just goes whomp back to like Siberia population.
Makes sense.
So Hannah says, hello, ladies. I just felt the need to compliment your beautiful podcast that I so enjoy listening to. I'm 27 years old and often feel like I was born in the wrong generation as I strive to live a simple life for myself and my family. This world we live in is beyond fast paced and lacks the simple joys of community, fellowship, and the beauty of having a conversation face to face, not staring at a phone. Your recent episode on The Pursuit of Less was music to my ears, as I think most of us need to take a step back and enjoy the simple things that don't include any form of technology.
Holla.
I love listening to you as I weed my gardens, and your words make me stop and really take in how wonderful it is to see my small children playing in the hose or swinging on their swings. My four-year-old daughter comes into the gardens with her red sand bucket and says, Mom, can I help you weed? And it melts my heart. As I feel like I'm doing my part and possibly raising a future homemaker myself. Thank you for sharing your hearts and continue to share as you inspire not only myself, but women, mothers, and anyone who can see our world needs to slow down and can see really less is more.
Yes.
Bless you both.
Oh, thank you, Hannah.
Bless you,
that
Hannah.
That was really kind of you to say. And again, a big part about why we do this podcast is so you know you're not alone. I mean, homemakers are pretty isolated people, aren't they? Even with technology, it still can be a really isolating endeavor. So you are not alone, Hannah. We are your people.
We are.
Even though we have to connect through a phone. My hope is that it trickles on well past that interaction on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shay.
Yes.
I know it's... 9 in the morning here. It's 7 in the morning there. But we're just going to do it.
Let's do
it. We're going to
cue the wine music. I actually do like to pick my wines in the morning because it does affect, if I'm feeling something in particular, it does affect what I'm going to cook for dinner. Do you do that?
For sure. Well, it's sort of like, you know, when you go out to the garden in the morning and you do a little quick harvest just because you're out there with your coffee cup and your bathrobe and it starts getting those
juices flowing
for what you're going to make for dinner. So it's the same thing. Call the wine rack.
Yep.
Pick your wine. A lot of times I'll take a wine and I'll just Google what goes with da-da-da-da, you know, and just not necessarily follow that exactly, but it gives me a little bit of inspiration, especially as we're all trying to learn a little more about wines.
Yes, we are.
And today's episode, of course, is brought to you by Dry Farm Wines. Dry Farm is an online wine subscription, so another great reason you don't have to leave the house. It pairs organic, biodynamic, naturally yeasted, low sugar, low alcohol wines from all over the world. So Shay gets hers shipped to the house. I get mine shipped to the house, completely in line with the better, not more philosophy. Shay, I love you told me the other day that you sort of treat your Dry Farm subscription as your bar. Now,
It's my bar.
Take that.
I go there instead. And you know why?
Yeah, they set.
Okay, we went on date night a couple, like last week, okay? And I had a French 75, which is a sparkling wine and gin kind of drink. Mm-hmm. And like, I felt terrible. I just felt so terrible, which is really sad to me. But frankly, I would rather sit out in my garden with a bottle of Dry Farms. You know, it's more cost effective than it is definitely getting drinks out. So this is, we call it the Malaga Bar. This is where we are. It's fabulous. I think that's
really a great mindset. You have your lights, you turn on Spotify or Pandora on the phone.
Yep.
Open a bottle of Dry Farm wines and
yep.
You don't have to get a babysitter. You don't have to wear a nasty blue mask and exactly. Try to sip wine through some mask.
Exactly. Put a movie on for the kids. Do what you need to do, girl. Get it done. Okay, so what are you drinking tonight? What have you set aside? Do you already have one picked out?
I do. Okay. I do. So this is a new one that I've never received before, and it's an Anita Nitnoss. Nitnoss Hans.
I was just going to say, it's got to be Austrian.
This is a 2018 red blend from Burgenland, Austria. And I did try it.
You tried it? It's nice.
I did. No, I did. I wanted to know. It's really good.
Okay.
I'm not going to just talk about it without having had tried it.
Get it, girl.
Very alive. This is something I'm just so intrigued about with these wines is like kombucha. They had a little bit of a fizz to
it's
it.
It's like kombucha. That's a good comparison.
It's not a sparkling wine, but you can definitely tell this, whatever's in this bottle is alive. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been neutralized.
Yes.
So I was just reading a little bit about her and her philosophy is just a complete devotion to making wines that reflect the origin and terroir of their area. And so she, like other dry farm vintners, are using biodynamic methods, hand harvesting, which I think is really, really cool.
So cool.
And a spontaneous fermentation. So friends, what this means is these wines are not using genetically modified yeast. They're using the yeast that comes on the grape mm-hmm. to cause the fermentation and all that good activation. So her vineyards are situated in Burgenland on the north shore of Lake Neusiedl.
Yes.
I don't know how to say that.
You did
Somebody from Austria.
You did really great.
That, right? But the soil is clay and loamy and gravel. And it's just, I really like it. I think this is one that I will be requesting. What are you doing?
I'm chewing a piece of bacon. Do you know what goes really well with wine? Actually, bacon.
Do you know what goes really well with everything?
Bacon?
Bacon.
You know, I don't think I've actually tried this blend that you're talking about, but I didn't.
I'll show it to you. This one
okay,
is pretty,
no, I don't
pretty
have,
bold
I haven't
label.
Had that
you
one.
Recognize
yeah.
it. It says Anita.
Anita.
In huge,
we see you,
huge
Anita.
Letters.
I didn't love blends before I did Dry Farms, but they do a lot of blends.
You know, it's funny that you say that because when you are standing in the grocery store and you see, or me, mm-hmm. when I would see red blend, I'd be like, oh, that's a cheap wine. That's just a homogenization of a bunch of stuff. I don't want that one. I was always looking for a particular region,
right.
a particular chateau. So when I unboxed this and I saw red blend, I'm like,
mm-hmm.
if it's good enough for Dry Farm.
Yep.
I'm going to have to give it a chance.
Yes.
It's a good, I mean, there's 5 different grapes in here.
Isn't that amazing?
Only 2 of which I can pronounce. I need to learn some German.
Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I love this. If you guys did not catch our episode that we did with Todd from Dry Farms last week, do go check it out. It was a really awesome episode. The only bugger was we did have some people listening from Michigan. And for some reason that you're not allowed to ship wine into Michigan or something like that.
I don't think really right now you can do anything in Michigan. You just have to sit handcuffed in a chair.
If you guys are there, we're praying for you. Okay. We're praying for you. Michigan's. Yeah. I mean, Washington's not much better right now. It's pretty dire, but come on, I can get wine. So that's something. I'm going to focus on the positive here. But yes, do go listen to that episode because there is a reason we drink these wines. There is a reason we recommend Dry Farms in our spirit of better, not more. So head on over to dryfarmwines.com/homemakerchic because they are doing a special still where you can get a bottle with your first purchase for a penny. They can't give it to you. That's illegal. But you can get it for a penny. So go check them out. There's information on them in the show notes, of course. But we love this company massively so. And we're glad to bring them to you. Dryfarms.com, dryfarmwines.com/homemakerchic.
I was telling a friend all about that episode the other day, and she was like, oh, crap.
I know.
And I know. it's sort of like the meat industry or other food industries where you're like, yeah.
Once you know, it makes it hard.
I didn't really need, now that I know. Great.
I know.
Thanks for that.
I know it's tricky. I feel like that, dare I say, and we don't need to go down this rabbit trail until we're ready to go down it, but I feel like that with cheap chocolate and child labor. And you guys know coffee. I'm all like
coffee and coffee. Chocolate. Like,
there's a good way to do this and a really bad way to do this. And cheap chocolate makes me crazy. It makes me crazy. Like, please don't give it to my children. please. I don't want it. Anyway, that's another episode. We'll go there later.
Okay.
But today's episode is all about flowers. Flowers, yay. Flowers, flowers. I called Angela the other night upset because I knew my garden had just tipped the scale. It rose like a goddess from the sea all spring.
Venus rising from the waters.
And then it's just now just over the crest of its peak. And I'm trying not to be upset about it because there is beauty truly in every season.
Right.
And that's very true of the flower garden even, especially if you're harvesting things for seeds and herbs and packing, you know, your salve jars and all this fun stuff we can talk about. But it is, you know, a little bittersweet to be here. But I'm so thankful, obviously, to have these garden and have these spaces. So how does your garden grow currently? How are you feeling? You're probably just cresting because you're usually a couple weeks behind me.
Yeah. So my garden peaks here at the end of, right about my birthday, which is next week, I think. And interestingly enough, my roses always peak a couple weeks before that. And they'll give me another round, you know, but they're still pretty fabulous, but they were just in their heyday. Like 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. My garden is really interesting this year as far as me gauging its beauty. I mean, it's beautiful. I have about 10,000 black hollyhocks and I planted a peach ruffled variety. They're going to open any day, hopefully still while the black is there to serve as a backdrop for them. But with COVID, I was really cautious to invest money in annuals. I just like, okay, I'm going to focus on vegetables and just if I'm going to invest in the garden, you know, I did place a huge perennial order and lilacs, like a lot of structure.
Yeah.
But my annuals were pretty sad. My zinnia were kind of a bust. I did finally place a really late order with Farmer Bailey for snapdragons that I just put in the ground the other day. So typically I would be harvesting snapdragons right now, like my first bouquets. But actually mine are only about 5 inches tall. So
they'll grow fast.
They will grow fast, but I'm kind of excited because if my garden peaks next week, but my annuals are behind, that means I'm going to have this really great burst in August.
Yeah.
And I'm being really diligent about cutting back lady's mantle, cutting back, I always say Nepeta and someone on YouTube corrected me the other day, Nepeta.
I've never heard
it. I thought it was Nepeta.
I've never heard it say Nepeta.
I've never heard it said Nepeta.
They
I
could
made
be
this
right.
beautiful video and that was her comment. Nepeta.
You know what? Like, not everybody on YouTube is right, turns out. I hate the way your mouth moves when you talk. I'm sorry.
You know that thing you do with your lungs? Breathing?
Why do you have to breathe so loud next to me?
So I went out last night and I harvested like this much lavender.
Oh, lovely.
I'm cradling my arms like a big fat baby, like a big fat reed baby. And I didn't even put a dent in it. These are all I planted 76 lavender plants this year.
That's amazing.
And so someday I'm going to have when they're huge. Oh my gosh. I'm just I'm just reveling in it. And so
you should.
Yeah,
think about how much work has
the annuals are going to bloom when any perennials that I lopped off give their second round. Mm-hmm. So I could have a really baller August. Mm-hmm. Long story short.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, the layered garden, we talked about that book last week. That was such a good book for me in terms of thinking, what's next? So, okay, once the echinacea fades, what comes next? And in going about planning out your garden, we might be getting a little ahead of ourselves here. I think we need to kind of go back to the beginning. But that's kind of what I'm always asking myself. Like, okay, when the snapdragons fade, and luckily they hang on for a while, but what comes next? And it might just be structure, or it might be evergreens, you know, later on in the season. But that's kind of how I've thought about planting my gardens this year. And it's been really helpful. We've just had these beautiful waves of stuff that just kind of come and go, but there's been something to replace it, probably for the first time ever. Not just staring at a blank garden like, what are we doing here? So
mine is still a little bit younger, so there are definitely blank spots. So like when I trimmed back the lady's mantle, it looks a little scalped, you know, and the snapdragons that should be growing right next to it and distracting your eye from that scalping are not really that big.
Yeah.
But it's just going to be
It takes time. Yeah. And, you know, I've got this beautiful big oak tree in my greenhouse gardens that has given me a gorgeous area of shade to plant. And that's where I put in all my, you know, hostas and ferns and anemones and all this beautiful stuff. But I've realized since putting in that garden, I can tell which way the roots grow and like how far they are from the surface of this tree, because there is one corner. It made me think of it because I have my lady's mantle there, and lady's mantle is like the only thing that will grow there. It just kind of looks bad all the time. Stuff doesn't really overwinter because it can't send its roots down that far because the tree roots are all there. So I'm trying to come up with some creative ways to fill this garden without like flowers. So maybe potted flowers, or I've seen them do some stuff with just creative things with wood or architectural pieces. I got to think of something because it's like the one big spot in the garden that looks scalped. It looks sad. Like somebody didn't love it enough to take care of it.
I have a few of those. I just try to skip over them with my camera.
Yeah.
There is nothing to see
like,
here.
Can I just get a cool old rusty wheelbarrow and like tilt it on its side? Like, what are we doing here? What's going on here?
I saw the other day at a junk shop, so cute, a child size rusty wheelbarrow.
Oh, that is cute.
It was adorable.
I love having stuff like that in my garden. Cool old pots.
Do you have a lot of things like that in your garden?
No, I used them a lot when my garden was being filled in, when it was just still kind of dire. And then it got a little yard sale looking to me.
That's why I asked, because I'm very leery of props.
Yeah.
And so kind of like interior design, I try to pick one or two textures that I'm going to go with. I don't want it to look, like, you know, around here we have gift stores and they fill the front yard with all the tchotchke, knickknack stuff to put in your garden. Like I'm always, I don't want it to look like that. I want it to look really chic and tailored. But still whimsical. So like I have a few old concrete mushrooms. I love old concrete mushrooms.
Which is a great texture with like terracotta. Like those marry very well.
Yeah. So most of my, if I have anything, it's concrete.
Yeah.
Or terracotta. And then I do have two, you know, there's a lot of reproductions now, but these are Turkish legit olive buckets.
Yeah.
They're beautiful.
Yeah.
And I have my lemon trees in those and they're way out in the garden. I really would like to get some more really nice, like there's a place around here that sells like statues.
Yeah. They gotta be good though.
Oh no, they're this I can't afford them.
Yeah.
This is a very high end garden place. I can't, they're beautiful. They're already like covered in green goop.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I wouldn't want to put them like in a prominent place because my house still does have a bit of a farmhouse look, even from the front.
Yeah.
The shape is colonial, but like tucked into a little niche, like on your way to the woods.
Just a little ping angel. Nothing to see here.
Magical.
Little cherub. Right? Okay, that
no,
actually,
I'm thinking more of like Grecian, okay, like sexy. Well, that too. Like, come on. I don't need no cherubs.
That actually reminds me one of a gardening book that I have that I really, really love. Let me grab it out here. It's called A Gentle Plea for Chaos. This is a really fun little Ooh. Gardening book, Reflections from an English Garden. And it was written by a lady who and her husband started a garden in England right before the war, right before World War II. But she has this quote in there, and it kind of makes me think of our gardens, because similar as our styles are, particularly in our taste of flowers, we have very different mm-hmm. styles of garden in many ways. This is from a different book. From We Made a Garden. I've got like six gardening books here. This is from a different book. From We Made a Garden. Same situation. Okay. So she's talking and she says, Walter, who's her husband, Walter and I had several things particularly in mind when we made the garden. The first was that it must be as modest and unpretentious as the house. A cottage garden, in fact, with crooked paths and unexpected corners. It made me think of my garden, obviously, because our house is very modest and unpretentious. Mm-hmm. It's small. It's was originally just like an orchard shack. It's not showy at all. Like you'd only see one level from the front. It's white stucco. You know, it's just very cottagey. Your house sits up on a mountain, like a again, like a Venus rising up. Like, you know, it's just like ours is at the bottom of a hill. You know,
yeah,
enveloped in orchards, and yours is set up on this mount, and it's like weird. Three stories and all these windows. They're so different.
Right.
I don't think your house is pretentious, but it's not. I wouldn't look at it and say, "Oh, that's a modest house." That's not a word I would use to describe it.
Yeah, no, it's like
it's in a. When it's you like stand an next estate. To
it, it's imposing.
It's a chateau. Like you know.
Well, no,
it is kind of it. Like if you were to drive. Up to it, I imagine. I actually haven't been there. Like it draws your attention, right?
It does. You come around this curve in the driveway, and there it is over on the left, like set up about 5 feet from where you are. So that was kind of challenging because I do love cottage gardens, and I had to come up with a way to keep it really comfortable, but also give the house its due, like an
something that fit with it.
Any other word besides regal. Like it has to have, like, that's why I laid the garden out. So it's not quite symmetrical, you know, all those different beds and everything, but it has still the formality of the center pond.
Right. And the straight lines.
The front door.
That's what made me think of it, you know?
Yeah. Like, but then I softened it with all like the rocks and cragginess, and, you know?
Yeah.
So, cause I in my mind, like, I know I call the show like Everyday Chateau on YouTube, but to me, it's like a country house. What I really wanted.
That's a good word for it.
A country house. Yeah. You know, the cottage in Sense and Sensibility, mm-hmm. Bartlett Cottage. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I had the budget, I would replace all these garish windows on the front and just make them a little bit smaller, mm-hmm. a little bit cozier, mm-hmm. still have the greenhouse effect, but these windows are so modern, but it's that flat front, like colonial. That's the look. That's the feeling I want you to have, like an elegant, English cottage, not a farm cottage, but like the cottage on an estate.
Yeah. And I, you know my house is like,
yours is a legit,
mine's like the foreman's
Cotswold's
house that
cottage,
like is the in
farmer's
the back,
cottage.
In the backwoods, you know, where the wife and his servant lives and like,
right.
or, you know, the farmhand and his wife lived is what I meant. Mm-hmm. So basically,
So I'm your not servant. Like totally, you know, we were going to talk about flowers, but it is really, you have to work with the architecture you've been given.
Right. Right.
You have to. And when you start fighting it, you start getting a really contrived look, whether it's in your home or outside your home. That's why, like, I had to, as much as I love Provençal, mm-hmm. you know, French elements, I sort of switched more to like a Normandy farmhouse look inside because there's nothing Provence about the outside of this house.
Right. You've got like evergreens, you know, all those like
there's,
woods.
There's nothing, nothing there.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have stone and beam inside, but to go more of a Normandy route made mm-hmm. so much more sense. So you got to do the same in your garden.
I think
you're a ranch in the suburbs.
Yep.
You know, really working with that.
Yeah, I think so.
An orchard cottage.
It really does depend. So like with our crooked paths, when we were setting the structure of our gardens, there is not a flat piece of property on our property. Nothing is flat. Mm-hmm. Everything has just the slightest curve to it because we're in the foothills of the Cascade Mountains here. So I actually live in a valley. So all these mountains, you know, rise up and then go down and sort of down to the Columbia River. So everything is sort of built on these little hills. Anyway, So there was no straight path to be had. Like there was nowhere to even put something like that. Like the only way we could make it work was winding around the house, winding around the orchard trees. And I think you're totally right, because I think if you just see somebody's garden and, oh, I love that. Like Monty Don's garden, totally flat. Like I've never seen a bump. He shows these pathways and I'm like, oh my gosh, there is no way on God's green earth I could ever make anything like that here. It just wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. But he's got this just big open flat space. And that allows him to play with a different architecture than I play with. So I do a lot of crooked paths and a lot of arches, because those kind of give shape and dimension to what is otherwise just kind of chaos, as it were.
But what I love about yours is, and this is something it's going to take me years to develop because I'm on a flat space, you know, aside from my hill that the house is on. I love about yours is that you meander, like you follow this here, you follow the steps down to the greenhouse. Mm-hmm. You go around this corner where if you're going to meander in my garden, you're taking a stroll, like you're out in this big expanse and you're, it's just
different,
very different. And I do want to create, you know, Monty has like his feel like rooms.
Yes.
You know, when you're in one space, you literally don't see the next space. And it blows my mind when you look at his before pictures.
Yeah.
And it's just like that swamp.
Yeah.
And his Labrador is running in the background. It's just flat and nothing. I mean, obviously he's been at it for 20 plus years, but it's amazing.
It is amazing. Well, you have to remember, I am married to somebody who is half hobbit. And what that means is that he has this particular affinity for little tucked in spaces and little special feeling things. And like this unique element, he wants to feel like he's someplace else. He loves this idea of transportation. So it's like Chronicles of Narnia, you know, like go into the wardrobe and see what's next. Yeah. What happens when we walk through this arch? And so he's always pushing me to, in a good way, but like, how can we create a different feeling here? Or like you're going into something. You know that scene in The Little Mermaid where they're in the little canoe thing and they go into the willow tree in the water?
Yeah.
We kiss the girl.
Kiss the girl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like you're watching that and you're like, oh my gosh, you're somewhere totally magical just because you're in this different sort of space. That's kind of what I go for. And it's going to take me a long time because like I've shared before, we have very few trees on this property. And we've planted a lot of trees, but they're not here yet. You know, they will, they'll get here in time. But, you know, that just takes a bit of time. So,
yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to do with all my ugly arches is someday those will be just rose tunnels and you will pass through one tunnel to get to the pond and then you'll pass through another tunnel to get to the vegetable garden area.
Yeah.
But it's going to take forever. I mean,
it just is going to take forever. But, you know, I saw one time somebody commented on Monty's Instagram and she said, Monty, you work so hard in your gardens. Are they ever going to be done? Are you just going to be satisfied? And I probably have quoted this before on the podcast, but he's like, you don't get it. Mm. You don't get it. In his like straight up Monty style. You know, you don't understand. Mm-hmm. Because it's not, again, like we've talked about this so often. This isn't a garden. Isn't something you arrive like, okay, I've arrived now. It's just a labor of love for your life. It's something that you do. It's just something you do. It's not ever something you've completed. Because once you have your rose tunnels, there's going to be something else. Or you're going to be propagating roses, you know, or like a rose breeder in northern Wisconsin. Who knows? Who knows? Actually, I want to share another quote from this.
Okay.
I'm going to share another quote. This is from a book called Time and the Gardener, Writings on a Lifelong Passion. So back to what we were just talking about.
I think I have that
one. Elizabeth Sheldon.
Yes, that's when you're like, oh, this woman gets my soul.
She gets my soul. And this is this is only on page 3, and I had already like dog tagged it. I keep saying dog tag. Okay. That's not the right word.
Dog tag. Dog eared.
Whatever.
It bugs me that you bend your pages. Put a scrap of paper in there.
No, I bend them. I write in them.
Writing is
brutalize
one thing, but
my
the
book.
Bending of the paper bothers me.
I like
me.
It. It's like, look, I need to come back to here. And I did. Okay, so she's talking about the physical wearing down of her body. She's old, as she writes this.
Hello.
What I object to is the steady process of gradual dilapidation. Now it's the knees, then the back, and in my case, the eyes. In the new system, I would propose we would all go vigorously, full speed ahead until our time was up, then fall suddenly on our faces, finished. She's talking about dying.
Amen.
Yeah. Montaigne, the essayist, said he hoped death would find him planting cabbages. I myself would like to meet death in the flower garden, falling face down into a cushion of dianthus, if it's not too much to ask. I love that because she gets it. A garden isn't something you put in and like, oh, I nailed it. Cross that off the list. Done. So let's talk about how that even became a seed that was planted in us. Like, how did we become flower people?
Did your mom plant flowers? My mom did.
She did. I remember a few in particular. Yeah.
We had my mom always did. We always had peony, and my mom wasn't a big gardener. She had a few spaces where she planted. So we had a big wooden planter box along the driveway, along the side of the house, under kitchen windows, and she would load it with snapdragons. She planted rocket snapdragons every year, loaded. And then we had a split rail from fence out front, and she would underplant the split rail with snaps too. And
that's
peonies.
Charming.
Yeah.
That's very farmy.
Cape Cod. It was very charming. And that, I don't think there was much more. We had a hibiscus, one random hibiscus in the back, maybe some rhubarb. But I don't remember much more, but it was meticulous. I mean, it was just always perfect. And snaps were her thing. Mm. I mean, I went to school. I have pictures of me on the first day of school. I would always take a bouquet to my teacher. And
that's charming.
That's what we did. Mm-hmm. We did snapdragons.
My mom kept beautiful flower beds. I lived in the same house till I was, I think we moved when I was 17. We moved to my grandpa's old house. But at the house I grew up in, I mean, she just had these beautiful beds. But I remember there was one shady spot on the backside of the house, and it had Lily of the Valley, which is my flower for May, because I was born in May. And I always loved Lily of the Valley. I just thought it was the contrast of the green and the white. And then she had this kind of wood rock looking thing, and it had chicks and hens all over it. And all around it. And I remember just loving those. But when I was, I think, 11 maybe or 12, she gave me one of the gardens and said, okay, this is yours now, because I was interested in it. And so it was my job to like to tend it and to weed it and to plant it. And I just planted it full of sunflowers because I love sunflowers. In fact, I'm going to find a picture. I have a picture of me. I think it's like on my 12th birthday, maybe. And it was just she got me all sunflower stuff, and I decorated my room, and it was just, I still love them dearly. But, so I would say it started earlier than most, you know, like there was something in there. Mm-hmm. I don't know why there was something. And then, when I was 15, I kind of got introduced to I was dating this guy. Dating when you're 15, what a stupid idea. But he delivered flowers for a florist in town, and so I kind of got to just be like, oh, I like flowers, you know. And so I would see some of the stuff that he would deliver, and you know, that was kind of fun. So then when I was 16, I got a job at a florist, and I worked there until you know, on and off through college and then on and off when I would come back for summers and that kind of a thing, then went back full time. Mm-hmm. And I was there till we left for Alabama. So I was, I don't know, 26, 27, something like that. Mm-hmm. So I ended up working there for a really long time. It was really high end florist and did a lot of work for weddings. And my boss there was an amazing gardener. Truly a remarkable cottage gardener. And so she taught me a lot about growing flowers. And, you know, it's one of those things too, the more you're around them, the more you fall in love with them. And then you start talking to them and like you're there at 4 a.m, you know, making boutonnieres and you're like, oh, aren't you just a pretty little thing? Like, let me just tuck you in there. And, you know, you just sort of develop these, this relationship with them. And she's actually the one I went to Europe with the first time. And it was really fun because that's where I saw cottage gardening just like that's the style of gardening for the most part. At least the, you know, we spent time in Normandy and we spent time in like the Cinque Terre and, you know, around Florence. And it is this very European, non-pretentious kind of homey gardening style. And so that's what my pictures were when we went. It was just food and gardens.
Food and flowers.
Just food and flowers. Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. So needless to say, it's a habit that I have been feeding for quite a while now. Quite a while now. But, you know, we've talked about before about rentals and this garden here at my house now, it's my first garden I've ever owned, ever. So you had your house that you were able to do. That was kind of a different situation at your condo.
Yeah.
Tell them about your rogue planting.
What'd you say?
Tell them about your rogue planting, you rebel.
Rogue planting. Well, you know how I feel about authority. There were these really just big, established, nasty bushes and a few just that typical variegated hosta, not the pretty one.
Yeah.
The really light green and white with the purple, you know, not pretty. And big white quartz rocks.
Lovely.
And I didn't want to ask for permission. So in the middle of the night, one night, I yanked out those bushes and got rid of them like a maniac. I mean, these were, I don't know how I got them out of the ground. I really don't know. And then I went to my grandma's farm and I got some, it's got a name. I feel like we've talked about this before on the show. It's called my grandpa and my mom call it ditch plant. But it's got a name like Valerium. It's got a name. I can't think of it, but it's purple. And they call it ditch plant. Grows like by ponds and almost looks like the actual flower is slightly reminiscent of butterfly bush.
Okay. Like I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. I don't care for it, but that's what I did back then. My grandma had these little yellow button flowers that we still don't know the name of. So I took some ditch plant from her, took some mallow, which I don't care for. These days, took some of these little yellow button flowers and I planted a garden and then I bought snapdragons and I planted snapdragons. And the reason we do snaps in our family is they were my great grandmother's favorite. She did snapdragons and lilacs. And so we're very like traditional, but we do this because great grandma did it, you know, and it was amazing. It was probably 4 by 20 and just ran along the side of the house and I put some rusty furniture out and strung some Christmas lights and we would sit out there. Absolutely no privacy whatsoever. But that was
condo
my first
living.
Garden.
Yeah, and that's amazing.
Fantastic. I have the cute. Maybe I'll find a picture and put it on Patreon because it was cute. Painted with craft paint a little like a welcome mat at the front door with a rooster on it. And
I love that.
It was really cute.
I love that.
Oh, I think I planted everything I got from my grandmother. So she gave me a trumpet vine cutting.
Okay,
so
sure.
It's funny. It's all these flowers and colors I don't do today.
Yeah. It was probably like an orange, like a bright orange trumpet vine or something like that.
But I wanted something to just take over and wind around the doorway and be aggressive. And it did the trick.
No, it's funny how your tastes in flowers change over time.
Yeah.
When I put my gardens in up at our rental farm, again, thinking we're going to be here for a long time, so I'll just invest. I just went to Lowe's and I was just like, I guess I'll take this. And I kind of like these colors together. And I had a decade of experience as a florist. Like I knew how colors worked together well enough, but didn't know enough about the growing patterns of flowers. be like, okay, this blooms in the spring and this blooms in the summer. And, you know, this turns right. colors in the fall, those sorts of things. And that just comes with experience. I know it can be really overwhelming when you get started to be like, there's a billion flowers. There's a billion different ways I can do this. And I just need a formula. I need the right way to do it. And that's just not the way that gardening works. I mean, I'm sure you get asked
people ask us that all the time. Like, how do we get started? And we're like, just dig a hole.
Yeah, you just start. You have to kind of be willing to start. It is one of those things that mm-hmm. nobody's garden's the same. Nobody gardens the same way. You know, everybody has different
right.
ways of doing this. And I mean, I think that's part of what I love about it. It's such a unique thing. There's no arrival. There's no like, okay, now I've reached the standard of excellence, because there really isn't one. Mm-hmm. It's just what you like. Isn't that kind of strange?
Yeah, it's very relative. And even the best of gardeners will, you know, Monty still calls himself an amateur. And he calls himself an amateur gardener. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
So there's, if there's literally that much to be learned.
Yeah.
Then just, we've talked
about it.
The beauty of being an amateur, just be a total amateur. And one thing I would say is to somebody brand new is don't feel like you have to start with 75 different kinds of flowers.
No.
I actually don't even have that much variety.
I don't either.
At all.
I don't either. I would say there's a solid dozen, I would say, that just are on repeat for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about those.
I would say even just
because I get asked, like, what would you start with? The top of my list. Okay. I know what you're going to say. You're going to say roses and herbs. Mm-hmm. So those are on repeat.
Roses and herbs.
All throughout the garden. Roses and herbs.
And I have lady's mantle under the herb category, because that is probably in my top three favorite flowers. It makes me so happy.
Okay. So yes. So roses, herbs. I grow like tarragon and rosemary and chives and parsley and thyme. And sage. Those would probably be my top ones that I grow the most of.
Do you have variety? I have different varieties.
Different
of sage.
Varieties.
Do you grow different
varieties? Different varieties mm-hmm. of sage and different varieties of thyme. But I use them less as.
And there's so many. There's so many different varieties of thyme. Like, just buy them all and stick them everywhere.
When I go to sleep at night and I'm not thinking about how sad I am about my garden already on the, you know, fading away. But I dream of this herb garden in my mind that is this big square. And its fencing on the outside is like waist high, and it's made of grape vines. And then on the inside, it's just herbs. So there will be a thyme bed with just 50 different varieties of thyme, you know, and there's going to be dill sprouting up everywhere mm-hmm. and a big sage bed with all the different varieties of sage. And it's going to be fabulous once I execute it. I don't know when that's going to be, but it's going to happen. But yes to herbs.
You know, I was telling you the other day about where my herb garden is, that it's, you know, I've only been here a while and it's too much shade. It's just not happening. And, you know, we're going to put that bread oven down in the stone wall.
Yeah.
Which is the front of this particular garden. And I'm thinking, I'm to the point where I told Joel, I'm like, I'm ready to expand outside of this space.
Yeah. Next. Well, I always take
And I'm thinking about surrounding the bread oven with an herb garden and planting all the thyme in the cracks of the stone wall.
Because
we're going to stone the bread oven. It's going to be like a medieval bread oven.
Okay.
And so like maybe plant the thyme in between all the stones. So it's like a living bread oven.
Cool.
And then I could have all the herbs down there for when you're like making pizzas and you just want to toss them on your...
Yes, please.
Yeah, I got like
do that.
Heart palpitations.
Yes, I know,
just
seriously.
Talking about it, but that would be full sun and flat and beautiful.
Yeah, that would be amazing. We have this middle strip of land that runs, we've had our pigs there in the past. Right now, it's just kind of a meadow. We use it to raise our ducks on as well, because they can graze and be out there. But for the most part, besides mm-hmm. the two brand new walnut trees that'll be really big in like 50 years, at the top, it's empty. It's just a little meadow. And it's not flat, but it's not steep. So I'm thinking that mm-hmm. might be where. Same again, like you've always told me, you're just pushing back the wilderness little by little. Mm-hmm. So you start really close to the house and then you slowly eke out every year. You get a little further and a little further. We haven't been able to put our attention there or to the back of the house at all. But, you know, we're slowly getting there. Like, it takes time to layer these things in. Okay, so roses, herbs, lady's mantle, hollyhocks. Mm-hmm.
Hollyhocks for sure.
I just love hollyhocks. They're so casual. They're so unpretentious. They are the friendliest, farmiest flower, I think, that I know of. Like, come on in, friend. Come on in. There are hollyhocks here. You know?
I love them.
I love them too. I stole some seeds from my favorite bakery last fall because they had beautiful peach, ruffled pink, like not white, like stark white, but just this really, really, really soft yellow. And I have black ones as well, but I just put out a bunch of pink ones and, you know, apricot ones, and they're quite stunning. I'm quite taken. Nice. I'm quite taken with them.
I put black ones down in with my lavender and my roses down like in the parterre area by the pond, yeah. Like on either side, yeah. I'm always trying to just distract a little bit from the arches while they're growing in.
Yeah.
And they're so pretty. We had big thunderstorms last night. Bless his heart, Joel went out because those ones weren't tied up. I tried to tie everything up before the storms came weeks ago, but he's like putting in pitchforks and wrapping twine around just to keep them from bending over.
Yeah.
Purple globe thistle.
Okay. Yes.
Is my spirit flower.
Yep. Globe thistle.
I don't have any.
Okay.
I have the other one. What's the smaller one called?
I know which one you're thinking of, but I don't think of that as a globe thistle.
No, but it's thistle. It's thistle. Though, and purple. But it's not the globe thistle.
I can't think of what it's called.
ECHINOPS.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. I don't know how you say that.
I don't either. I always just look at it and go, oh, yeah, that one.
I let my thistle go to seed last year, and now I've got 1,000 little thistle babies. They're slow to grow, so they won't flower, quote unquote, this year. But they're growing nice and strong, so next spring I should be able to dig them up and, you know, move them around. Because right now the thistle's very concentrated in one spot, but it's just coming into flower now. It's beautiful. And I'll try to remember the variety that I have, because I think you would really like it. It's, okay.
I just love them. They glow.
They glow.
I mean, they glow in the evening.
Yeah.
They're just my,
and the shape.
I love the structure.
The shape of them. Yeah.
The shape is incredible. I do love structure in a plant.
Yeah.
So as much as I love like whimsical and floppy.
You got to have both. You got to have both.
Yeah, you got to have both.
Everything and can be too like roses, cosmos. So. Mm-hmm. Cosmos will kind of just blow in the wind, and you know, they've got their really soft fabric-y petals.
Feathery.
Mm-hmm. Which are great. But then like, I love like a nice rigid sunflower, you know, just like 12 feet tall of stock. I love that as well. So I got to add sunflowers to the list. And I got to tell you my little trick with sunflowers. It's worked so far. Find a variety you like, or two or three, and plant them your first year in your garden, and then let them go to seed. So sunflowers, if you let them go, they'll develop seeds in their big little black centers. And then we live in little bird like paradise here. We are bird friendly folk, and the birds will come and eat the seeds. They love it. It's like it's a bird feeder. That's exactly what it is. But they will spread them. They'll spread them all over because, you know, they'll get one out and then another bird will fly after it and it'll drop it or whatever. But they'll spread them all over your garden. And what I love about this is it gives you a super organic planting of these flowers because they'll pop up everywhere. They're super easy to identify and really easy to pull out if they get them totally in the wrong spot. But if you let some of them just self-seed, as it were, with wildlife, it really looks cool. I love where they've planted them. And what's amazing to me is if I would have grown it and tried to plant it in a lot of these places, it wouldn't have taken off. You know, it's like in the shade underneath this trunk of something. But for some reason, when the bird puts it there and it's spent a winter, you know, hanging out, it'll grow there, which is amazing.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I did a huge section of them out in the Euro village next to the cottage. And I stupidly put down straw because it was going to be really dry. And I wanted to have the the moisture retained. I put down straw in like half of the area and then I got sidetracked and never did the other half. So of course the chickens that escape, the escapee chickens, came and scratched up all that straw.
Always.
My bad. And so I have this huge area and like half of it's empty and the other half is just these massive sunflowers. They're going to be like 15 feet tall.
Yeah. I love
those. I'm so sad because I wanted this like little mini field, but it'll be cool, but it's very obvious something got into the first third of this bed.
Well, can you plant them now? I mean, we can plant them still. They'll go until like late October here.
Yeah. I mean, it's taken them this whole time to get as big as they are. So we'll see.
Yeah.
It might be. I don't know. But I did this variety in the back by my cucumbers for pickles. And I have it kind of just climbing through. I have all these little teepees that I'm training the cukes to go up.
Yeah.
This variety is so pretty. I don't remember if it's a black flower or a burgundy flower. I don't remember. But the foliage is gorgeous. Mm. It's like this creamy green with purple. It's purple edged.
Ooh.
Everything on this plant is outlined in purple.
Goodness.
It's so beautiful. I don't even care what color the flower is because I'm enjoying it. I've got it right back with my lush zucchini. So you have like the zucchini flowers and the pickle flowers and then these random sunflowers growing.
Oh, eggplant flowers are beautiful. Sorry? Eggplant flowers and okra flowers. Those are gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous.
I'm not a huge eggplant person. I only have two plants.
Mm-hmm.
But like nothing's happening. They had flowers.
They like it really hot. They like it really hot.
Well, it's really hot. Nothing's happening. It's weird. We'll see.
For my cooking community, I'm doing this preserved eggplant recipe, which I know does not sound that exciting, but you can eat it fresh. You can just also pack it in oil and it's really good. You want me to tell you how to do it so you can try it?
Sure.
Okay.
Do tell.
You slice the eggplant into like 1/4-inch slices and dry roast it like hot so it gets charred. Set it aside and then in a bowl whisk together some white wine or red wine vinegar, olive oil, a bunch of fresh mint, a bunch of fresh parsley, good salt and pepper, a little bit of garlic, and then cut the eggplant into strips, toss it in with the vinaigrette and eat it on a piece of crusty bread.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit almost Moroccan.
Yeah. It's so good. It's so
yum.
Good. And you can pack it in a jar and top it off with olive oil and it'll hang out in your fridge all winter. Yeah, it's
so
a good
nice.
One. It's a good one.
I went out last night and harvested all the zucchini flowers that had just fallen to the ground.
Yeah. Do you shove them full of ricotta and fry them?
Yeah.
Yes.
Eat my face off.
Yes. That's why you're my girl.
I could eat like 40 of them. I don't want to share them with my family. I make them like at night.
Yeah.
I'll fry one up like at night at 9 o'clock after the kids have gone to bed. I'm like, a little glass of wine. My treat.
There are some treats you get like that as the gardener that you just really can't get, at least at markets here in the, you know, where I am, that are just treats selective to the gardener. You know, that's kind of one of them. Like, how often do you see squash flowers at the market? You probably see them a lot in Europe.
No.
But not so much here. So that's one of the luxuries.
You can actually order them. Did you know that?
No.
If you're having a party or something,
from
you can
where?
Order. I don't know.
They die in like 4 hours. I mean, like.
Well, they send them cold. Like, it's a thing.
Interesting.
I remember seeing it online a long time ago and I was like, noted.
Interesting.
I'm gonna remember that.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of what other flowers I just couldn't possibly live without. You know, I have a new favorite this year. White dill.
Yeah, I planted a ton of that.
It's beautiful. And why have I never grown it? It looks like Queen Anne's lace or a carrot flower. You know, it has that, what do they call that? That
and
shape.
Is that the same thing that Monty calls cow parsley or is cow parsley different?
I don't know what cow parsley. I mean, I've seen his stuff, but I don't know what it actually is. Because we don't have it here. I think it's a weed
but
there.
But it's got that Queen Anne's lace
shape.
Yarrow-esque head.
Yeah.
so beautiful. That dill, all those in that same family. I love that.
It's beautiful. Look. It's beautiful. Yeah. I'm letting the seed head or the flowers go to seed and then just sort of breaking them off with my fingers to try to get it to self-seed in the garden. And then I'll also mm-hmm. save a couple just in case it doesn't self-seed well that way. I'll take a couple heads off dried and then so I can plant it out again next year. But it's really beautiful and really easy to grow. I mean, you just sprinkle the seeds, you know, super simple.
Yeah.
And I love flowers like that. Lavender, of course, would have to be on our list. I just harvested a good chunk of my lavender. I had to because it was so big and beautiful. It was just flopping on the ground. Like its stems got so long. It was just laying over, you know, which is kind of sad. So I went out and harvested it and I just keep it in big baskets in my living room. And, you know, it just hangs out there as a giant basket of dried lavender, which is great year round. I love having it, but it does get a little dusty after a year. So I just pulled out all the dead stuff that was dusty and had little cobwebs on it and put in big armfuls of fresh lavender. And the house just smells incredible right now. It'll only last for a couple of days until it dries. But those couple of days, I just found myself taking these deep breaths. Gift. And
they're
like
the squash flower. It's just like little tiny gifts throughout the
season. It is. And I'm like, let it fill you. Like, take it in. Take it in and let it fill you, because there's going to be a day at the end of January when you ain't feeling it. And like, you got to remember this moment. You know, it is like putting deposits in the bank so that when you need to make withdrawals, there's something in there to draw from, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I harvested, like I said, my pile last night and the kids were like, oh, that smells so good. And what I like to do is I love to tie them up in smaller bouquets and tuck them on the top of artwork, like right where the nail is or something. And I've been sitting on this little stash of oil paintings. And some of the frames are a little bit yuck, but the paintings themselves are wonderful. So I'm trying to figure out how I want to hang them, but I want to hang them in my hallway going down the stairs. And that's where I want to just tuck all my bouquets because it will, the oil paintings, you know, oil paintings are oil paintings, but then the herbs will kind of knock them down
so
and keep
good.
Them cozy.
So good. You know? I've got bouquets really like that hanging all over my house. All over. I'm like, here's a doorway. Yeah. I guess I'll hang a bunch of lavender over it.
I just have like little nails and I just hook them right on.
Where can I stick this thing? And, you know, there gets a point where they get dusty or they get knocked down. And but for the time being, I want it to like, I want you to walk in and think some like crazy, like, this is not the right word to use, but like some witch herbalist lives here. Just like, what's going on here? What is, was there sage hanging from the chandelier? Like, what's going on?
Right. Well, it's just that old world look that we each like. I did the chive garland over my stove. And now the joke is like, don't bump it or else it'll just sea of black seeds.
That's what you do all winter is just vacuum up all of the stuff that you've hung up all summer long. Yep. Just put a big cauldron on your stove so the seeds fall into the cauldron and then you can just, you know, really live up to that old world kind of a feel. I love that. There's so much beauty to be had out there right now. I tell you, it's just drink deep is what I meant to say.
Drink deep.
That's what I tell myself every time I go out and I can just walk out barefoot and I can walk along the rows. And if you guys don't have a flower garden, and I know it's not in everybody's situation right now, but I will tell you, there is some major therapy to be found out there. And when I find that the world is spiraling and things are moving too fast, I leave my phone inside and I just go spend time with my flowers and my children. They're usually out there too. But there is something calming about just tending to a space and being able to control it, maybe for lack of a better word, right? Practice dominion over it a little bit.
But if you don't have one, feed that part of your soul. There for sure is a community garden in your area or a botanic garden.
Or a friend who wants help weeding their garden.
A friend who, And go do that. Go take a book. Go just spend some time and just walk and observe and be quiet. Yeah. There's there's got to be somewhere nearby where you can take that in. And then go buy a potted something.
Yeah.
Put it where you sit outside. Just find some little pocket of enjoyment that you can create for yourself, even if the hobby of gardening isn't for you. Because not everybody's life is set up in a way to be able to support the time that it requires, or even the financial investment of doing a garden. But it's, you know, at the farmer's market this weekend, grab a bouquet for yourself and bring it in and do that for yourself. Mm-hmm.
I love to be reminded that regardless of what's going on everywhere, like the flowers just, they're just there, and the bees are just there doing their job, and the hummingbirds come, and it's kind of this, it really is like a calm sea in the craziness. I love it. In fact, that's where I'm going right now. Podcast over.
Good, because we're good on time here. I just looked at the clock. Oh, we're just going to talk about flowers for 6 hours today.
Well, thank you guys for being here. And do remember that sharing is caring. So if you have a fellow gardener in your life, share this episode with them. Share the love with them. We would love to continue to grow our listeners as we reach more people and expand this wonderful community that we have here. So we appreciate all of the shares and all of the love you guys have shown us over on social media. Be sure to visit us over on Instagram at Homemaker Chic Podcast. I'll be honest, I'm slacking a little bit on Instagram. I might be an episode or two behind, but you know what? I'm watching the bees. I'm very busy right now. You should see the piles of weeds I've been pulling from my garden. It's very productive. And then, of course, make sure that you show some love to our sponsors. Go and visit them at AmericanBlossomLinens.com, coupon code HOMEMAKERSHAKE20, and JovialFoods.com, where you can get free shipping and stock your pantry. We love you guys. Thanks for being here. If there's anything you're not sure about, check the show notes below. Angela will try to take those books that I talked about. Is there anything I'm missing?
Nope. Someone messaged me again the other day. Where do I find the show notes? The easiest way, if you can't find them on your podcast player, is just go to homemakerschicpodcast.com. Mm-hmm. And all the coupon codes for our advertisers will be there, and all the show notes as well.
Yes. Lovely. All right. Off to gardening, ladies. Cheers.
Time to get to work. Cheers.